I'm Robert Cervelli, and this is Future Proofing, where we explore how many communities are taking charge of their own future in the face of our increasingly fragile world. I would like to acknowledge that this podcast originates from Nova Scotia, Canada, which is part of the unceded ancestral territory of the Mi'kmaq Indigenous peoples. The territory is called Mi'kma'ki.
Hello, everyone. This is Jillian Kerr with the Center for Local Prosperity, and we have another fantastic podcast today coming with you from the Executive Director of the Farmers Market of Nova Scotia and Justin Canafio. Did I say that right, Justin?
Pretty close.
Oh, see, I should do the prep beforehand. So I worked really closely with Justin in the planning of the Dig In Food Systems Summit that we held in DeBert, Nova Scotia in November for all of Atlantic Canada. And just hearing some of Justin's insights, I thought that it'd be very worthwhile for those of us interested in local prosperity and in food security and food sovereignty for Atlantic Canada to hear a little bit from Justin. So Justin has been the executive director of the Farmers Markets of Nova Scotia since 2018. It's a nonprofit cooperative of over 40 farmers markets, co-founder of the Canadian Farmers Markets as well, Canada's National Farmers Market Coalition, and he's also a director with the Center for Local Prosperity. So for many of you, you've probably heard about Justin before. He's anchored by a steadfast belief in the power of small-scale, community-based businesses to build local and sustainable food systems. And that's what drove him to spend his master's degree living and working on 10 organic farms from Quebec to the Pacific Coast. And Justin has a really interesting perspective and a new role as a scholar. So I'm going to leave it very open, knowing how the two of us work, and just start maybe, Justin, with your thoughts now that it's been about 2 months and a bit since we had the summit, and we are working on a post-summit world for Atlantic Canada, and just sort of your thoughts, anything that's sort of resonated with you as things that were exciting or necessary for us to move on or whatever.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, thanks for the introduction and thanks for having me. It's pretty exciting. Been with the Center for Local Prosperity for a couple of years now already, and it's my first time getting to do this, so I'm very excited. I'm so thankful for the conference that we were able to pull off as this incredible team, bringing together people from all over Atlantic Canada and beyond. It really, I think, was timely, and, you know, at least in a Nova Scotian context that I can speak to. We've got a provincial mandate to source 20% of our food locally by 2030. You know, this is written into legislation as an objective. It's also mandated. We've got a new food and beverage strategy about to be announced in the coming months. We've got a new consumer loyalty and awareness program that's coming up that has been called Nova Scotia Loyal. It might have a different name, but, you know, and we remain amongst the most food insecure provinces in Canada. Most of the most food insecure provinces in Canada are in Atlantic Canada. And before the war in Ukraine, we were already at over 17% of Nova Scotians experiencing food insecurity. So we were probably to a place where over 1 in 5 households are experiencing food insecurity right now with wild increases in food prices driven by inflation. So, you know, it's been a lot. That conference happened towards the end of the year. It was a massive culmination of hard work. We had all these great people come in and a couple of days of really great discussion. And not only that, but folks actually committed to forming working groups so that the momentum doesn't atrophy and we actually keep this going and start sinking our teeth into some pragmatic projects. I really also just have been balancing the idea of like recovering after what was a really wild year and taking some time over the holiday break just to slow down and just think about what this all really means. And, you know, started this year, jumping right back into things after a few weeks off. Here in the farmers market world, we have a new strategic plan that's just about to kick into gear. And it's all about putting down roots and reaching out and forming partnerships and working what I would say ecologically, putting up mycelial connections and really working in a collaborative way to address some of these issues and exploring how we might mobilize our sector, the farmers market sector, with its over 40 farmers markets in our cooperative, over 1,500 owner-operated businesses across the province, how we might work with other organizations to address some long-standing issues in food systems, including inequity and inequality, a lack of access, a lack of regionally appropriate infrastructure. There's just so much that we can do. And it really feels like we're finally seeing, between COVID and inflation, between the war and all these different geopolitical disruptions, the fragility of the sort of globalized capitalist food system has never been more exposed than it is now. And with those massive, massive challenges and threats to our system come tremendous opportunities to do right and to change things and to build back better. So I'm balancing right now, to sum it all up, really a critical lens of all that's been happening with an urgent need to take action, but also a wellspring of optimism, given just how things seem to be culminating, and that relocalization is, in my opinion, the only way forward. And now we have a real opportunity to walk the walk after talking the talk for many, many years.
And thanks. That's certainly a healthy and I like the optimism, because I do know that 2020, too, I thought was going to be like, you know, a banner year after 2021, but we certainly had our with inflation and the war in Ukraine and just what we're seeing with prices at the grocery stores. And I guess what I hearken back to Linda Best from FarmWorks talking about, for the last 5 years, now this is Nova Scotia specific, but our farmers have been losing money. And that's unlike what's happening in other provinces. Like, we have sort of the worst record here in Nova Scotia. And I guess, how do we take your optimism and the insights that you have, and what would you suggest that when it comes to, you know, our producers, any kind of insights into how we can make sure that they are getting, you know, fully paid or right paid, and from an education to a pricing perspective, I guess, any insights from your lens?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a sobering reality. And I would say that my optimism is not in spite of those tremendous challenges, but actually because of those tremendous challenges. Because to me, while I respect and appreciate that these are actually having tremendously real and serious implications for folks who are out there trying to do the right thing by farming on a small to medium scale with low impact methods in this province, and it's an uphill battle against constant reliance on commodified and corporatized food imports. The only way forward, really, is to dig our heels in and radically reinvest in reestablishing local food infrastructure in this province. And I think that government, non-government, private industry, non-government organizations or nonprofits, we're all seeing this as a turning point. Like, it needs to happen. It's been talked about for as long as I've been involved in this. My entire education and professional life has been in this world. And I've, you know, after almost two decades now, see that there is no going back. It's like we've clicked on a ratchet. And so, bringing it back to the folks who actually have, you know, dirty boots and dirt under their fingernails and are the unsung heroes in many, many cases, of the people who are out there growing, gathering, making, baking, and getting food to us. I think the time is now for the government to make radical investments, and not subsidies, radical investments in relocalizing food infrastructure in this province, whether that's cold storage, transportation, whether that's processing, aggregation and redistribution. And it needs to happen. There's an institutional procurement working group that has been summoned by the province, and somebody who's actually dedicated to institutional procurement now in the province of Nova Scotia. Same is happening in New Brunswick. I think that we are going to see in the next few years a big change in new market opportunities for our small and medium scale producers. I can't speak to the reality of the folks who've managed to get to what I'd call large scale in Nova Scotia, other than that my hat goes off to them and that they play an incredibly important role and they don't get the respect that they deserve in these circles. But I will also say that we don't necessarily need our producers to have to get to that level, that large scale level. If we relocalize our economies and have the infrastructure in place to help folks do things cooperatively, share resources, share costs, and reduce the amount of money it costs to get their product to market, whether that's through processing or transportation or storage or whatever step along the value chain to get to from field to fork, those costs will eventually go down. And as the, you know, as we see massive disruptions in the global food chain or the supply chain, the corporatized food system, as we see massive inflation and rising food costs, the conversation, I think, is going to start shifting away from, you know, stretching out dollars per calorie and talking more about the power of economic recirculation and relocalized economies and regional economic activity. Our local producers have always played a key and critical role in that. And the fact that they are, in many ways, the economic engines of so many rural communities in Atlantic Canada, just yet in a province like Nova Scotia, have been running in the negative for 5 years in a row, according to StatsCan, speaks to a massive disconnect between what the province seems to want, because it wasn't that long ago that the Environmental Goals and Sustainable Prosperity Act said 20% by 2020. And that can was just kicked down the road. But we've been asking for this for a long time, and the province has been attempting to act on it for a long time and has acknowledged the importance of local. So bringing it all back, I do think that things like food hubs, things like regionally appropriate food infrastructure, whether that's meat processing, whether that's aggregation and redistribution centers, you know, whether that's a larger piece of infrastructure in the Halifax Regional Municipality. I've been part of the conversation around the Halifax Regional Food Hub, for example. I've been on that planning team. The time is coming that our small-scale producers and our medium-scale producers are going to hopefully have diversified market stream or income streams to help make their production a little bit more resilient and durable. And diversify their revenue streams. I just, that's what so many of us are working towards. At the same time, you know, not losing sight of just how integral, like right now, I'm just talking about a price per pound to producers. That's obviously so important. But I also don't want producers to lose sight of the fact that they're going to play such an incredible, they already are, but will continue to play an increasingly important role in addressing food insecurity and food sovereignty in this province. And, you know, I could talk about our Nourishing Communities food coupon program run through the farmers markets, for example, as one example of how our small to medium scale producers, many of which are running in the red just to get food to people, are providing thousands and thousands of Nova Scotians, including its most vulnerable citizens, with weekly access to food. So, I guess my takeaway is don't lose hope. We need you so bad. We've never needed you more than we need you now. And we're doing everything we can to help your vocation and livelihood become sustainable and profitable.
That's fantastic. And I the point you were saying about the different programs, like the coupon program, you know, one of the things I guess, Justin, this is going a little off topic, but I was listening to a podcast, it was the United States group. And it was a woman who had been involved with helping rich people with their, you know, their charities, right? They wanted to have their money going to this and that. And she realized it usually happened about three times a year when school started, Christmas and one other time, maybe it was Easter, and what happened during the rest of the year. So she got into it. And what she looked at, it was logistics of trying to get food. Like we throw out so much food, you know, because of whatever regulations, timing, whatever. And I guess what I was wondering about with the farmers market and these localized things, are you seeing more connections being made? Like you just talked about this coupon program to where instead of farmers having to, you know, plow under potatoes or whatever, Are we finding access ways of getting food to those that need it, or are any of the programs you're working on sort of trying to make those connections that might not happen at a larger corporate level?
Yeah, I mean, one of the symptoms of a centralized commodified food system is that the buyers have all the power, and our producers become price takers rather than price setters, and are at the whim of strict purchasing agreements. And you know, a larger producer can just say, I don't want that, or I don't like cauliflower that's off by half an inch of a standardized size. So we have many producers in Nova Scotia who are plowing under a significant amount of food. Regionalized food systems are more nimble and are less prone to needing to buy all of the same thing. Food, I understand, you know, can be viewed as a commodity. It certainly is viewed as a commodity or a group of commodities in the industrialized, globalized food system. But on a regional level, food is nutrition. And so, you know, we see the emergence of new food systems, more localized food systems, such as food hubs. A great example is the station in Newport Landing that is able to take what would have been considered cold cauliflower that would have been just fed to the worms and plowed under, and is being transformed into a product with a diverse and lengthier shelf life in the form of, for example, riced cauliflower that can be used for a variety of gluten-free applications. That's just one example, but I think there's an interesting situation here where we don't want to rely too heavily on creating food systems around reducing pre-existing levels of waste, because eventually we will become victims of our own success in what is a temporary revenue stream boost by not wasting food, by letting it plow under and making a little bit more money by getting it to people who need it. If we increase the efficiencies at a local scale and have more community-based, regionally appropriate food systems that are responsive to the needs of our population rather than the needs of a global market, we'll actually have less food that gets plowed under. In the long term, that'll actually be better for producers. But in the short term, yes, there are these opportunities to prevent food from being plowed under by rerouting that. My only caution to folks who really mobilize around reducing food waste is that food waste won't be an issue if we stop relying exclusively on a global food market to be the source of our sales. And then if we build programs around having this perceived constant availability of cheap food that would have been plowed under anyway, so a farmer is going to be like, oh, I'll sell it to you for cheap instead of wasting it. That might not always be there. That being said, there will always be a percentage of any producer's crop that doesn't fit the gold standard of what larger scale producers will want to buy. So there will always be cull crops. There will always be crops that or portions of crops that could go to making things like soups and such. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is that it's fickle. The more regionalized our food systems are, the more adaptive and responsive they can be, and the less we'll see large amounts of products like milk getting dumped or potatoes getting plowed under, and the more that we can be regionally responsive.
Yeah, I think that I guess what I would say, because I mean the people, the team or the group that listen to the CLP are you know, I think a broadly informed group, maybe not so much on the food side. So if you were to, like, I think you've given some good suggestions and definitely some good intel and things for people to consider. If you were going to talk to the average audience member of CLP listening to this podcast, what would be some ideas that you could give them about becoming more involved or, you know, helping to be part of this you know, transition and relocalization?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a new budget that's coming out. There was an attached to that budget or the use of that budget. And I guess I'm talking about Nova Scotia right now as one thing, a little broaden my reach to be more Atlantic Canada focused afterwards. But there is a food and beverage strategy, and there was a public input period to actually provide input. And even though that public input might have already closed, there's always an opportunity to write to your MLA and say, this is where the budget needs to be going, particularly around food and food security. So, I mean, this applies in any province. don't forget that MLAs will get back to you if you write them letters. And demand regionally appropriate food systems. Demand that we increase our food sovereignty and decrease our food insecurity. Demand that we have regionally appropriate food infrastructure that is regionally adaptive and responsive, that actually meets the needs of communities so that we don't rely so heavily on big box stores to feed us, that have shown no issue with jacking the cost of food to the point where, and you know, I respect and appreciate people who spread their dollars per calorie. You know, you could go to a farmer's market right now in any part of Atlantic Canada, and the cost per unit for most products there is not different, if not in some cases actually cheaper than what is being charged at a grocery store. Go buy a squash in a grocery store right now and be prepared to start throwing dollar bills in the air. It's, you know, and that's just one example. I think the more that we shift our spending habits to local, the more that reverberates in our communities. You know, the more that it sets the tone that we are looking for regionally produced foods. It might be inconvenient at first, but it's actually way more convenient to have regional food systems than to rely on, you know, food subscription programs that erode our regional capacity to feed ourselves. And I think that, yeah, I mean, start talking in your community. You know, do you live in a food desert? Is there a regionally appropriate form of food infrastructure, whether it's a farm market, a community-owned grocer, a community-supported agriculture drop-off point, or a farmer's market, that might make sense in your area? So many of these are started and often championed and run by well-meaning, well-informed community members. I can speak from experience. I have over 40 farmer's markets in my cooperative. Pretty much every single one of them is run by a nonprofit board of directors. Almost all of them are nonprofit cooperatives, and they exist because and for their communities that they serve. And you know, I'm not saying we need more farmers markets, but we definitely need to figure out the areas that are underserved and find local food infrastructure to service those folks. You know, you could be the reason why there's a food hub in a community. You could be the reason why a municipality decides to donate an old school to a group of community members for a dollar instead of demolishing it and letting some developer put a condo there. There are opportunities now to point to relocalized food infrastructure as social and economic engines to create an opportunity to reduce our reliance on imports and to create economic recirculation. And you're listening right now to an organization that puts out reports that arms you with the data to demonstrate, whether it's at a municipal level or a provincial level, that there is a massive social and economic return on investment for putting money into relocalized food infrastructure. You know, so I mean, feel free to reference our reports and just, you know, use the numbers that we have in there to create your own calculations, and suddenly you come armed to a town hall meeting with the facts. And they're irrefutable now. That's, and again, I'm gonna pull it back to that optimism that I expressed at the start. I wouldn't be as optimistic if I didn't know with a wonderful level of confidence that the solution to these issues is relocalization, in that whether you are a hardcore fiscal conservative or an anarchist, regional food and infrastructure creates social and economic opportunity and regional spin-off benefits that are irrefutable. It's the fiscally responsible thing to do to relocalize, and it's also the socially responsible thing to relocalize. So I think that's why I have so much optimism. Not to mention I get a daily dose of it. I mean, I have to go to farmers markets every week or else I get in trouble. It's my job. And in addition to the massive economic engines that farmers markets are, I can't think of a better place to come feel human and feel inspired than to spend 2 hours in a farmer's market eating and being nourished and coming back with a canvas tote full of goodies to share with your loved ones. So, yeah.
Well, Justin, and it's, you know, I know we're sort of at our time limit, because it's interesting, because at the Dig In Summit, you ran the session that was on climate change while I was doing another one. So I think we'll maybe save the climate aspect to the end. But as you said, not only is this socially responsible economically, it's also environmentally responsible, right? Like bringing your avocados and things in from like South America, just think about it from a greenhouse gas perspective. And so, you know, I think what everything you've said is you know, it, I mean, I find you inspiring anyway, but I think that this is, it's practical, right? And I'm an economist. So like what I think about is things like benefit cost, and for people to have opportunities to get their food locally, like to know where their food's from, to become more connected to the community, there's no downside, as you said, to say it slightly differently. And I guess just to kind of sum it up, we talked about some of the ideas. Are there any resources, like we've talked about surveys that are going on and government, like, you know, we will try to get some of the government links to the mandates that you were talking about earlier. But, you know, are there any other resources or places you would tell people to go? CLP is definitely a place to go for some reports. But if people were interested in looking what they could do in their own small community, should they contact you? Should they contact any of your colleagues? Like, where do they go to kind of get the, you know, to help them get started?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I would say is just to stay in touch. I mean, we've had this incredible food summit back in November, and there are going to be these incredible working groups that form, and there's an opportunity to get involved. I would say if you're the type of person who really wants to actually get involved in, you know, in the work, then that's great. You know, stay tuned to the Dig In Summit on wherever your socials are. Check out foodsummit.ca. You know, there's a get in touch opportunity on the website, just to stay in touch and be pointed in the direction of what you might actually be interested in. So that's, you know, that's for the pragmatists out there, for the people who have the, you know, the luxury of the time that they can sink their teeth into some projects. And there's a lot of folks out there, I know. But, you know, in the, you know, if you just want to like reacquaint yourself with local food systems, I would say the easiest thing to do is go to your local farmer's market. You know, there isn't a provincial farmers market association in anywhere in Atlantic Canada besides Nova Scotia. We are very lucky and privileged in that regard, but you could go to farmersmarketsnovascotia.ca, and we have an online map of every market in the province. It's a member of our cooperative. In New Brunswick, you know, if you want to reach out to Suzanne Fournier with the National Farmers Union New Brunswick chapter, it's always a great start. Maybe you want to reach out to really local harvest of Ahekot-Tishenu if you live in Southeast New Brunswick. You know, there's some fantastic farmers markets in Prince Edward Island, as well as Newfoundland and Labrador. But that would be, I guess, you know, that's for me, it's the logical place to go, because not only do you get to go and experience the wonders of the farmers market to get your local food, but one of the perks of a farmers market is that transparency and community there. You actually get to go and talk to producers. You know, there are a lot of issues here. And they're very intersectional, from a lack of you know, living wages, to rising cost of living, to lack of housing, to food insecurity. You know, and sometimes having conversations with folks who are directly involved in the food side of things is one way to get into it. And you know, who better than the people who are out there making, baking, and producing the food for you? So just get out there. And I you know, I have my biases, but the revolution, so to speak, needs to be agrarian. It needs to be food focused, and food is the ultimate unifier and the ultimate way in which we interact with our environment. And I think it's you know, if you're going to choose a banner to fly under as you work towards you know, deconstructing this neoliberal globalization that has, you know, pilfered and really just tackled so many parts of our quality of life. You know, I think, you know, what did we say at the Dig In conference? Resistance is fertile. So, you know.
Oh, Justin, that's, you know what? I've just noticed the time too, and I wasn't very good with timekeeping. So we are at time, and I don't think there's anything better than resistance is fertile as a closing out. And so I just want to thank you on behalf of CLP, and you're on CLP. So I, you know, it's you thanking you in some ways, but I really appreciate your time. And yes, for those that are interested, we'll put some of the links in with our podcast, and just encourage you again, go to our food summit Ca website for more information. We've got a lot going on. And with that, I'm going to say thank you, Justin, and we'll stop recording.
Thank you so much.